You may prefer to wait for a doctor's advice. You may choose to prepare yourself, talk yourself down from a lifelong habit of overeating, clear out the fridge, eat the last cookie in the jar, have a scratch. Or you may want to get on with it and start to see visible progress within a couple of weeks. Do, however, begin on a day when you feel strong, purposeful, calm, and committed. Do tell friends and family that you're starting the fast diet. Once you make a public commitment, you're much more likely to stick with it. Avoid high days, holidays, and days when you're booked in for a three-course lunch complete with bread basket, cheese board, and four types of dessert. Recognize, too, that a busy day will help your fast time fly, while a duvet day generally crawls by like honey off a spoon. Once you've deliberated and designated a day to début, get your mind in gear. Record your details, weight, BMI, target. Do it before you start and note your progress in a diary, knowing that dieters who keep an honest account of what they eat and drink are more likely to lose the pounds and keep them off. Then, take a deep breath and relax. Better yet, shrug. It's no big deal. You have nothing to lose but weight. How tough will it be? If it has been a while since you've experienced hunger, even the slightest hint, you'll probably find that eating no more than 500 to 600 calories in a day is a mild challenge, at least initially. Intermittent fasters do report that the process becomes significantly easier with time, particularly as they witness the results in the mirror and on the scales. Your first fast day should speed by, buoyed along by the novelty of the process. A fast day on a wet Wednesday in week 3 may feel like more of a slog. Your mission is to complete it, knowing that although you're saying no to chocolate today, you'll be eating what you want tomorrow. That is the joy of the fast diet, and what makes it so different from other weight loss plans. How to win the Hunger Games. There is no reason to be alarmed by benign, occasional, short-term hunger. Given base-level good health, you will not perish. You won't collapse in a heap and need to be rescued by the cat. Your body is designed to go without food for longish periods, even if it's lost the skill through years of grazing, picking, and snacking. Research has found that modern humans tend to mistake a whole range of emotions for hunger. We eat when we're bored, when we're thirsty, when we're around food, when aren't we, when we're in company, or simply when the clock happens to tell us that it's time for food. Most of us eat, too, just because it feels good. This is known as hedonic hunger, and while you should try to resist it on a fast day, you can bask in the knowledge that, if you please, you can give in to temptation the following day. There's no need to panic about any of this. Simply note that the human brain is adept at persuading us that we're hungry in almost all situations. When faced with feelings of deprivation or withdrawal or disappointment, when angry, sad, happy, neutral, when subject to advertising, social imperatives, sensory stimulation, reward, habit, the smell of freshly brewed coffee or baking bread or bacon cooking in a cafe up the road. Recognize now that these are often learnt reactions to external cues, most of them designed to part you from your cash. If you are still processing your last meal, it's highly unlikely that what you are experiencing is true hunger. Total transit time, should you be interested in such things, can take up to 2 days depending on your gender, your metabolism, and what you've eaten. While hunger pangs can be aggressive and disagreeable, like a box of sharp knives, in practice, they're more fluid and controllable than you might think. You're unlikely to be troubled at all by hunger until well into a fast day. What's more, a pang will pass. Fasters report that the feeling of perceived hunger comes in waves, not in an ever-growing wall of gnawing belly noise. It's a symphony of differentiated movements, not a steady, fearful crescendo. Treat a tummy rumble as a good sign, a healthy messenger. Remember, too, that hunger does not build up over a 24-hour period, so don't feel trapped in the feeling at any given moment. Wait a while. You have absolute power to conquer the feelings of hunger simply by steering your mind, riding the wave, choosing to do something else. Take a walk, phone a friend, drink tea, go for a run, take a shower, sing in the shower, phone a friend from the shower and sing. After a few weeks practicing intermittent fasting, people generally report that their sense of hunger is diminished. The main struggle with doing the fast diet, or any form of fasting, is the first few weeks while your body and mind adjust to new habits, new ways of eating. The good news is that most people find they soon adapt. In fact, many people have contacted us to say that it is unexpectedly easy. Kimberly, who has been following the 5-2 method with her husband for some time, says, "I'm amazed at the energy I have during the fast days. It's not terribly difficult, but it is mildly challenging. I've done Weight Watchers over and over, and this is so much easier. Many of my friends are interested to see how we do. So far, I feel like my belly has gone down. My husband's blood pressure is down 10 points, systolic and diastolic." The important thing, of course, is to have a strategy that works for you. David, for example, writes, "I find even a small breakfast triggers hunger for the rest of the day, so I avoid eating anything until late on." You have to approach a fast day in the right mindset. So take heart. On a fast day, refrain, restrain, divert, and distract. Before you know it, you've retrained your brain and hunger's off the menu. Tomorrow is another day. Willpower, patience, and delayed gratification. Perhaps the most reassuring and game-changing part of the fast diet is that it doesn't last forever. Unlike deprivation diets that have failed you before, on this plan, tomorrow will always be different, easier. There may be pancakes for breakfast, or lunch with friends, wine with supper, apple pie with cream. This on-off switch is critical. It means that on a fast day, though you're eating a quarter of your usual calorie intake, tomorrow you can eat as you please. There's boundless psychological comfort in the fact that your fasting will only ever be a short stay, a brief break from food. When you're not fasting, ignore fasting. It doesn't own you, it doesn't define you. You're not even doing it most of the time. Unlike full-time fad diets, you'll still get pleasure from food. You'll still have treats, you'll engage in the regular, routine, food-related events of your normal life. There are no special shakes, no bars, no rules, points, affectations or idiosyncrasies, no saying no all the time. For this reason, you won't feel serially deprived, which, as anyone who has embarked on the grinding chore of long-term, everyday dieting, the kind that makes you want to commit harakiri right there on the kitchen floor every time you open the fridge door, is precisely why conventional diet plans fail. The key, then, is to recognise, through patience and the exercise of will, that you can make it through till breakfast. Bear in mind that fasting subjects regularly report that the food with which they break their fast tastes glorious. Flavours sing, mouthfuls dance. If you've ever felt a lazy disregard for the food you consume without thinking, then things are about to change. There's nothing like a bit of delayed gratification to make things taste good. Compliance and sustainability. How to discover a sensible eating plan that works for you. Most diets don't work. You know that already. Indeed, when a team of psychologists at the University of California conducted an analysis of 31 long-term diet trials back in 2007, they concluded that several studies indicate that dieting is a consistent predictor of future weight gain. We asked what evidence there is that dieting works in the long term, and found the evidence shows the opposite. Their analysis found that while slimmers do lose pounds in the early months, the vast majority return to their original weight within 5 years, while at least a third end up heavier than when they embarked on the project. The standard approach clearly hasn't worked, doesn't work, and won't work. In order to be effective, then, any method must be rational, sustainable, flexible, and feasible for the long haul. Adherence, not weight loss per se, is the key. so your goals must be realistic and the program practical. It must fit into your life as it is, not the life of your dreams. It needs to go on holiday with you. It needs to visit friends. It needs to get you through a boring day at the office and cope with Christmas. To work at all, any weight loss strategy has to be tolerable, organic, and innate, not some spurious add-on that makes you feel awkward and self-conscious, the dietary equivalent of uncomfortable shoes. While the long-term experience of intermittent fasters is still under investigation, people who've tried it comment on how easily it fits into everyday life. They still get variety from food. Anyone who's ever tried to lose weight on the only grapefruit diet or the cabbage soup diet will know how vital this is. They still get rewards from food. They still get a life. There is no drama, no desperate dieting, no self-flagellation, no sweat. Flexibility, your key to success. Your body is not my body. Mine is not yours. So it's worth carving out your plan according to your needs, the shape of your day, your family, your commitments, your preferences. We none of us live cookie-cutter lives, and no single diet plan fits all. Everyone has quirks and qualifiers. That's why there are no absolute commandments here, just suggestions. You may choose to fast in a particular way, on a particular day. You may like to eat once or twice, first thing or last. You may like beetroot or fennel or blueberries. Some individuals prefer to be told exactly what to eat and when. Others like a more informal approach. That's fine. It's enough to simply stick to the basic method, 500 or 600 calories a day, with as long a window without food as possible, twice a week. That way you'll gain the plan's multiple benefits. In time, there's little need for assiduous calorie counting. You'll know what a fast day means, and how to make it suit you. The maintenance model. Once you've reached your target weight, or just a shade below, allowing room for manoeuvre and a generous slice of birthday cake, you may consider adopting the maintenance model. This is an adjustment to fasting on only one day each week, in order to remain in a holding pattern at your desired weight, but still reap the benefits of occasional fasting. Naturally, one day a week, if that's what you choose, may offer fewer health benefits than two in the long run. But it does fit neatly into a life, particularly if you're not intent on achieving any further weight loss. Equally, if the beach beckons, or there's a wedding in the diary, or you've woken up on Boxing Day haunted by that fourth roast potato, step it up again. You're in charge. What to expect? The first thing you can expect from adopting the fast diet, of course, is to lose weight. Some weeks more, some weeks less. Some weeks finding yourself stuck at a disappointing plateau, other weeks making swifter progress. As a basic guide, you might anticipate a loss of around a pound with each fast day. This will not, of course, be all fat. Some will be water and the digested food in your system. You should, however, lose around 10 pounds of fat over a 10-week period, which beats a typical low-calorie diet. Crucially, you can expect to maintain your weight loss over time. More important than what you'll lose, though, is what you're set to gain. How your anatomy will change, your appetite will change, and your attitude will change. First, your anatomy. Over a period of weeks, you can expect your BMI, your levels of body fat, and your waist measurement to gradually fall. Your cholesterol and triglyceride levels should also improve. This is the path to greater health and extended life. You are already dodging your unwritten future. Right now, though, the palpable changes will start to show up in the mirror as your body becomes leaner and lighter. As the weeks progress, you'll find that intermittent fasting has potent secondary effects too. Alongside the obvious weight loss and the health benefits stored up for the future, there are more subtle consequences, perks, and bonuses that can come into play. How your appetite will change. Expect your food preferences to adapt. Pretty soon, you'll start to choose healthy foods by default rather than by design. You will begin to understand hunger, to negotiate and manage it, knowing how it feels to be properly hungry. You'll also recognise the sensation of being pleasantly full, not groaning like an immovable sofa. Satiated, not stuffed. The upshot? No more food hangovers. Improved digestion. More bounce. After 6 months of intermittent fasting, interesting things should happen to your eating habits. You may find that you eat half the meat you once did. Not as a conscious move, but as a natural one born of what you desire rather than what you decide or believe. You're likely to consume more veg. Many intermittent fasters instinctively retreat from bread and, by association, butter, while stodgy comfort food seems less appealing and refined sugars aren't nearly as tempting as they once were. That bag of Haribo in the glove box of the car? Take it or leave it. Of course, you don't need to dwell actively on any of this. It will happen anyway. If you're like me, then one day soon, you'll arrive at a place where you say no to the cheesecake simply because you don't fancy it, not because you're denying yourself a treat. This is the baseline power of intermittent fasting. It encourages you to recheck your diet, and that's your long-haul ticket to health. How your attitude will change. So yes, you'll start to lose bad habits around food. But if you continue to fast and feast with awareness, all kinds of other changes should occur, some of them unlikely and unexpected. You may, for instance, discover that you've been suffering from portion distortion for years, thinking that the food piled on your plate is the quantity you really need and want. With time, you'll probably discover that you've been overdoing it. Muffins will start to look vast as they sit, fat and moist, under glass domes in coffee shops. A maxi bag of crisps becomes a monstrous prospect. You may go from venti to grande to wanting only half a cup, no sugar, no cream. Soon you'll come to recognise the truth about how you've been eating and the wordless fibs you've told yourself for years. This is as much a part of the recalibrating process as anything else. You've changed your mind. Occasional fasting will train you in the art of restrained eating. In the last instance, this is the goal. It's all part of a long game of behavioural change that means that the fast diet will ultimately become neither a fast nor a diet, but a way of life. After a while, you'll have cultivated a new approach to eating, thoughtful, rational, responsible, without even knowing you're doing it. Intermittent fasters also report a boost in their energy, together with an amplified sense of emotional well-being. Some talk of a glow, the result perhaps of winning the battle for self-control, or of the smaller clothes and the compliments, or of something going on at a metabolic level that governs our moods. We may not yet know precisely why, but whatever it is, it feels good. Far better than cake. As one online devotee says, overall, fasting seems just right. It's like a reset button for your entire body. More subtly still, many fasters acknowledge a sense of relief as their fast days no longer revolve around food. Embrace it. There's a certain liberty here if you allow it to materialise. You may find, as we have, that you start to look forward to your fasts, a time to regroup and give feeding a rest.
The Fast Diet in Reality. Tales, Tips and Troubleshooting. How Men Fast. Michael's Experience. A lot of men contacted me to let me know how much weight they have lost and also to say how surprised and delighted they are that intermittent fasting turns out to be so easy. They like its simplicity, the fact you don't have to give things up or try to remember complicated recipes. I also think they rather like the challenge. The British actor and comedian Dom Jolly wrote that he felt it was an approach he could imagine sticking to for the rest of his life. The attraction for him is that he knows he will be able to eat what he wants the following day. He added that he now rather enjoys the fasting days, something I've heard from a number of men. One of the things that men seem to like particularly about fasting is they can fit it into their lives with minimal hassle. It doesn't stop them working, travelling, socialising or exercising. In fact, some find it fuels performance. In one Belgium study, men were asked to eat a high-fat diet and to exercise before breakfast on an empty stomach. Those that did put on far less weight than a similar group of men on an identical diet, who exercised after breakfast. This study adds support to the claim that exercising in a fasted state makes the body burn a greater percentage of fat for fuel. At least it does if you are a man. For me, a fast day now follows a familiar routine. I start with a protein-rich breakfast, normally scrambled eggs or fish. I drink several cups of black coffee and tea during the day, work happily through lunch, and rarely feel any hunger pangs until well into the late afternoon. When they happen, I ignore them or go for a brief stroll until they pass. In the evening, I have a bit of meat or fish and piles of steamed vegetables. Having abstained since breakfast, I find them particularly delicious. I never have problems getting to sleep, and most days I wake up the next morning feeling no more hungry than normal.
While most men I know respond well to numbers and targets, with associated gadgets if at all possible, I found that women tend to take a more holistic approach to fasting. As with much in life, we like to examine how it feels, knowing that our bodies are unique and will respond to any given stimulation in their own sweet way. We respond to shared stories and the support of friends. And sometimes we need a snack. Personally, for instance, I like to consume my fast day calories in two lots, one early, one late, bookending the day with my allowance and aiming for a longish gap in between to maximise the prospect of health gain and weight loss. But I do need a little something to keep me going in between. A fast day breakfast is usually a low-sugar muesli, perhaps including some fresh strawberries and almonds, with skimmed milk. There'll be an apple for lunch. Hardly a feast, I know, but just enough to make a difference to the day. Then supper, a substantial, interesting salad with heaps of leaves and some lean protein, perhaps smoked salmon or tuna or hummus, once the kids are in bed. Throughout the day, I drink mineral water with a squeeze of lime, tons of herbal tea, and plenty of black coffee. They just help the day tick by. In the months since I started the fast diet, I've lost 6 kilograms, and my BMI has gone from 21.4 to 19.4. If you are struggling with bigger numbers than these, take strength from the fact that heavier subjects respond brilliantly to intermittent fasting, and the positive effects should be apparent in a relatively short time. These days, one fast a week, on Mondays, seems to suffice and keep me at a stable, happy weight. Many women I encounter are well-versed in dieting techniques, years of practice, and I've found that a couple of tips can come in handy on a fast day. I'd recommend, for instance, eating in small mouthfuls, chewing slowly, and concentrating when eating. Why read a magazine? Why tweet as you eat? If you're only getting 500 calories, it makes sense to notice them as they go in. I've found, like many intermittent fasters, that hunger is simply not an issue. For whatever reason, and one wonders whether it suits the food industry, we've developed a fear of hunger, fretting about low blood sugar and whatnot. On the whole, for me, a day with little food feels emancipating rather than restrictive. That said, there are ups and downs. Some days skim by like a stone on water. Other days, I feel like I'm sinking, not swimming, perhaps because emotions or hormones or simply the tricky business of life have kicked in. See how you feel, and always give in gracefully if that particular day is not your day to fast. A dozen ways to make the fast diet work for you. Number one, know your weight, your BMI, and your waist size from the get-go. As we mentioned earlier, waist measurement is a simple and important measurement of internal fat and a powerful predictor of future health. People who do intermittent fasting soon lose those dangerous, unattractive inches. Body mass index, or BMI, is your weight in kilograms divided by your height in meters squared. Now, it may sound like a palaver, and an abstract one at that, but it's a widely accepted tool for plotting a path to healthy weight loss. Do note that a BMI score takes no account of body type, age, or ethnicity, so should be greeted with informed caution. Still, if you need a number, this is a useful one. Weigh yourself regularly but not obsessively. After the initial stages, once a week should suffice. The mornings after fast days are best if you like to see falling figures. You may discover that your weight measurement is significantly different from feed day to fast day. This discrepancy may well be due to the additional weight of food in your system, rather than changes in your fat mass from one day to the next. You may like to take an average over several days to arrive at a reasonable figure for any weight loss, but don't overdo it. Try not to make weighing yourself or your calories a chore. If you're someone who enjoys structure and clarity, you may want to monitor your progress. Have a target in mind. Where do you want to be and when? Be realistic. Precipitous weight loss is not advised, so allow yourself time. Make a plan. Write it down. Plenty of people recommend keeping a diet diary. Alongside the numbers, add your experiences. Try to note down three good things that happen on each day. It's a feel-good message that you can refer to as time goes by. Number two, find a fast friend. You need very few accoutrements to make this a success, but a supportive friend may well be one of them. Once you're on the fast diet, tell people about it. You may find they join in, and you'll develop a network of common experience. Since the plan appeals to men and women equally, couples report that they find it more manageable to do it together. That way you get mutual support, camaraderie, joint commitment and shared anecdotes. Besides, mealtimes are made infinitely easier if you're eating with someone who understands the rudiments of the plot. There are plenty of threads on online chat rooms too. Mumsnet is a great source of support and information. It's remarkable how reassuring it is to know that you're not alone. Number three, prep your fast day food in advance so that you don't go foraging and come across a leftover sausage lurking irresistibly in the fridge. Keep it simple, aiming for fast day flavour without effort. Shop and cook on non-fast days so as not to taunt yourself with undue temptation. For simple, sustaining fast day recipe ideas, have a look at the PDF. Before you embark, clear the house of junk food. It will only croon and coo at you from the cupboards, making your fast day harder than it needs to be. Number four, check calorie labels for portion size. When the cereal box says a 30-gram serving, measure it. Go on, be amazed, then be honest. Since your calorie count on a fast day is necessarily fixed and limited, it's important not to be blinkered about how much is actually going in. You'll find a calorie counter for suggested fast day foods in the PDF. Or you could download a calorie counter app. Far more importantly, don't count calories on a non-fast day. You've got better things to do. Number five, wait before you eat. Try to resist for at least 10 minutes, 15 if you can, to see if the hunger subsides, as it naturally tends to do. If you absolutely must snack, choose something that will not elevate your insulin levels. Try some julienned carrots, a handful of plain air-popped popcorn, an apple slice, or some strawberries, but don't pick and peck like a hen through the day. The calories will soon stack up and your fast will be dashed. On fast days, eat with awareness, allowing yourself to fully absorb the fact that you are eating. Not as daft as it sounds, particularly if you've ever sat in a traffic jam popping M&Ms. Similarly, on off-duty days, stay gently alert. Eat until you're satisfied, not until you're full. This will come naturally after a few weeks' practice. Work out what the concept of fullness means for you. We're all different and it changes over time. Number six, stay busy. We humans are always looking for things to do between meals, said Leonard Cohen. Yes, and look where it got us. So fill your day, not your face. As fasting advocate Brad Pilon has noted, No one's hungry in the first few seconds of a skydive. So engage in things other than food. Not necessarily skydiving, but anything that appeals to you. Distraction is your best defence against the dark arts of the food industry, which has stationed donuts on every street corner and nachos at every turn. And remember, if you must have that donut, it will still be there tomorrow. Number 7. Try the 2-2. Fasting not from bedtime to bedtime, but from 2 p.m. until 2 p.m. After lunch on day 1, eat sparingly until a late lunch the following day. That way, you lose weight as you sleep, and no single day feels uncomfortably deprived of food. It's a clever trick, but it does require a modicum more concentration than the whole day option. Or perhaps fast from supper to supper, which again means that no day is all fast and no fun. The point is that this plan is a just to fit, just like your waistband in 3 weeks' time. Number 8. Don't be afraid to think about the food you like. A psychological mechanism called habituation, in which the more people have of something, the less value they attach to it, means that doing the opposite and trying to suppress thoughts of food is a flawed strategy. The critical thought process here is to treat food as a friend, not a foe. Food is not magical, supernatural, or dangerous. Don't demonize it, normalize it. It's only food. Number 9. Stay hydrated. Find no calorie drinks you like and then drink them in quantity. Some swear by herbal tea. Others prefer a mineral water with bubbles to dance on the tongue, though tap water will do just as well. Plenty of our hydration comes through the food we eat, so you may need to compensate with additional drinks beyond your routine intake. Check your urine. It should be plentiful and pale. While there's no scientific rationale for drinking the recommended 8 glasses of water a day, there is good reason to keep the liquids coming in. A dry mouth is the last sign of dehydration, not the first. So act before your body complains, recognizing too that a glass of water is a quick way to hush an empty belly, at least temporarily. It will also stop you mistaking thirst for hunger. Number 10. Don't count on weight loss on any given day. If you have a week when the scales just don't seem to shift, dwell instead upon the health benefits you will certainly be accruing, even if you haven't seen your numbers drop. Remember why you're doing this. Not just the smaller genes, but the long-term advantages. The widely accepted disease-busting, brain-boosting, life-lengthening benefits of intermittent fasting. Think of it as a pension plan for your body. Number 11. Be sensible, exercise caution, and if it feels wrong, stop. It's vital that this strategy should be practiced in a way that's flexible and forgiving. It's okay to break the rules if you need to. It's not a race to the finish, so be kind to yourself and make it fun. Who wants to live a longer life if it's an abject misery? You don't want to grunt and sweat under a weary life. You want to go dancing, right? Number 12. Congratulate yourself. Every completed fast day means potential weight loss and quantifiable health gain. You're already winning. Questions and answers. Which days should I choose to fast? It really doesn't matter. It's your life and you'll know which days will suit you best. Monday is an obvious choice for many, perhaps because it's more manageable, psychologically and practically, to gear yourself up at the beginning of a new week, particularly if it follows a sociable weekend. For that reason, fasters might choose to avoid Saturdays and Sundays, when family lunches and brunches, dinner dates and parties make calorie cutting a chore. Thursday would then make a sensible second fasting day, chiming, if such things appeal, with the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad, who is understood to have fasted on the second and fifth days of the week. But be flexible. Don't force yourself to fast when it feels wrong. If you're particularly stressed, off-colour, tired or peevish on a day that you've designated to fast, try again another day. Adapt. This is not about one-size-fits-all rules. It's about finding a realistic pattern that works for you. Do, however, aim for a pattern. That way, over time, your fasts will become familiar, a low-key habit you accept and embrace. You may adapt your fasts as your life and your body changes shape, but don't drop too many fast days. There's a danger that you'll slide back into old habits. Be kind, but be tough. Does it have to be for 24 hours? Fasting for 24 hours is practical, coherent, and unambiguous, all of which will promise a greater chance of success. It is, however, merely the most convenient way of organising a fast. There's nothing magical about 24 hours. To save on bother, stick to it and remind yourself that you'll be asleep for nearly a third of it. Should I fast on consecutive days? Most of the studies done to date on humans have involved volunteers fasting on consecutive days. There may be some value in doing back-to-back fasts, but as far as we're aware, there are no studies on humans comparing this approach with split days. We do, however, know what works in practice for many fasters. Michael tried the consecutive system and found it too challenging to be sustainable over time, so he switched to the split version, fasting on Mondays and Thursdays. The weight loss, improvements in glucose, cholesterol, and IGF-1 that he saw are all based on this non-consecutive two-day pattern. There's a psychological imperative here too. Fast for more than a day at a time, and you may start to feel resentful, bored, and beleaguered, precisely the feelings that wreck the best-made diet intentions. A critical part of this plan is that you never feel challenged for long enough to consider quitting. By the time you've had enough, breakfast is on the table and another fast has passed. How much weight will I lose? This will depend largely on your own metabolism, your individual body type, your starting weight, your level of activity, and how effectively and honestly you fast. In the first week, you may experience water loss that can account for a significant dip on the scales. With time, your weekly calorie deficit will mean, thanks to the simple law of thermogenics, if energy in is less than energy out, you'll get weight loss, that you'll be losing fat. Be judicious. Abrupt weight loss is not advised and shouldn't be your aim. You may, however, anticipate losing around half a stone in 8 weeks. I know I should stick to low GI foods on a fast day, so which foods are best? As we've seen, foods with a low GI or GL will help keep your blood sugar stable, increasing your chances of a successful day with few calories. Vegetables and legumes are, needless to say, amazing, and you should rely upon them on a fast day. Packed with nutrients, their bulk fills you up, they have relatively few calories, and they keep your blood sugar low. Carrots are a great snack, particularly with a hummus dip, which scores an astonishing GI of 6 and a GL of 0. Fruit is handy too, though some fruits are more fast-friendly than others. Check the GI count of your chosen fast-day foods online. Diabetes UK has an excellent guide at www.diabetes.org.uk. Or look at the GI index from the University of Sydney on www.glycemicindex.com, noting that some foods have an unexpected count. Staples, for instance, are worth scrutinising with an eagle eye. The biggest surprise regarding them is how big an effect baking or mashing potatoes can have on blood sugar. On fast days, avoid these starchy basics and substitute with plenty of greens. Fill your plate. Watch out for fruit too. Some are your fast friends. Others will spike your blood sugar and are best left for days when you're eating freely. Eating the whole fruit will keep you feeling full longer. Strawberries without sugar are extraordinarily low in GI and GL, and also low calorie. No wonder many fasters eat a bowl for breakfast. The striking thing to note is the high sugar impact of raisins and dates. Avoid them on fast days. For more on calorie levels, refer to the PDF. I've read about superfoods and intelligent eating. Should I include superfoods during a fast day? The term superfood is more of a marketing ploy than a scientific construct, and clinical nutritionists are loath to use the description. All plants produce a huge range of phytochemicals that can have a beneficial role in the body. Eat them on a fast day, or indeed on any day you please. The following foods taste good, and they're generally low in calories, making them ideal fast day companions. Fruit. As the labs of the world continue in their quest for new anti-obesity marvels, the latest to emerge is the humble tangerine. Citrus fruits in general, and tangerines in particular, contain high concentrations of nobilitin, a compound that protects from obesity and atherosclerosis, in lab mice at least. If you like tangerines, eat them, perhaps spending time meditatively peeling away the pith. The same group of researchers previously found that grapefruit, rich in a compound called naringenin, encourages the liver to burn fat rather than store it. Grapefruit also contains compounds such as limonoids and lycopene, thought to have anti-cancer properties, and clocks in at only 39 calories per half, making it a good fast-day food. You should, however, be aware that grapefruit interacts with a number of common medicines, so if you are taking medications such as statins, consult your doctor. Alternatively, you could always throw in a watermelon smile, 30 calories for 100 grams, or an apple, around 50 calories for 100 grams, for flavour, crunch and pectin, a soluble fibre that can't be absorbed by the body but is useful in fat digestion. Apples are the ultimate convenience food, though they are quite high in calories. Eat the whole thing, skin, pips and core. You'll probably want to if it's one of your fast day treats. Tomatoes also contain lycopene, which may help guard against cancer and stroke. A handful of cherry tomatoes or strawberries, low GI, low GL, could be your best bet to get you through a tummy rumble unscathed. Check for calorie traps before you eat. Have a look at the calorie counter in the PDF. Berries. Blueberries are high in antioxidant polyphenols and phytonutrients. New research has found that these bold little berries may also be able to break down fat cells in the body and prevent new ones from forming. Pretty impressive, eh? Even if you don't buy the science, blueberries remain a handy source of vitamin C. Once you're berry savvy, you may want to cruise your local health food store for other superfoods. Goji, acai, aloe, hemp seeds, chia seeds and spirulina, a nutrient-rich blue-green algae. All curious, all good. Vegetables. Again, aim for a broad variety. Different colours, textures, tastes, shapes. Steamed broccoli contains a whole world of nutrients, including vitamin K. Green beans love a little lemon and garlic. Fennel is great if shaved. Invest in a mandolin. Perhaps teamed with orange segments and a squeeze of the juice. Edamame beans are a good source of low-fat protein and omega-3 fatty acids. Starchy veg, of course, tend to have a higher GL and calorific value, though they are satiating. Proceed with caution and don't add butter. Leaves. It goes without saying that green leafy veg are your fast-day friends. Spinach, kale, chard, mustard greens, salad leaves, a veritable vit fest and agreeably low in calories. Pep things up with chili flakes, ginger, cumin, pepper, lemon juice, garlic. Garlic, by the way, contains allicin, the active ingredient that lends it pungency, and is also thought to protect cells and reduce fatty deposits. So be liberal and carry sugarless mints. Herbs and spices. Low-cal, high-impact, no-brainer. Pickles may work for you too. Cornichons, jalapenos, onions, watch the GI values, or mustard. Anything really that brings a bolt of fire or flavour to your plate. Nuts. We've established that nuts are a fast-day favourite, filling and low GI. Almonds, though calorific, are high in protein and fibre, which makes them brilliantly satiating. Pistachios too. Better yet, they take ages to crack and eat. Cashews and coconut flakes will help animate a salad, but count wisely, nut calories soon clock up. Seeds. Sunflower seeds contain good fats together with iron, zinc, potassium, vitamins E and B1, magnesium and selenium, all that goodness in a tiny little packet. Soup. Scientists at Penn State University have found that soup is a great appetite suppressant. Go for a light broth, a miso soup, a kicky pho. Choose carrot and coriander over a creamy chowder. Cereals. Oats are a standby low GL staple, but mix it up. You could experiment with bulgur, couscous or quinoa. It's high in protein and fibre, easy to cook and a good source of iron. Dairy. Milk products, though full of protein and calcium, can also be high in fat. Opt for low-fat alternatives and save the cheese board for tomorrow. Fat-free or low-fat yogurt will bring protein, potassium, and, if you want them, probiotics along to the party, and like nuts, it will help you feel fuller longer. But beware, it can also be high in sugar. So whatever you eat on a fast day, or any day, the most important thing is to relish it. Go slow. Have a look at the menu plans in the PDF for more ideas. I know I need plenty of veg, but should I eat it raw or cooked? There is some debate as to whether vegetables are best eaten raw or cooked. Cooking may, as raw foodists contend, destroy vitamins, minerals and enzymes, but it also softens cellulose fibres, making nutrients more available for take-up in the body. Lycopene, a potent antioxidant found in tomatoes, is boosted in cooking. A small blob of ketchup is no bad thing. Meanwhile, boiled or steamed carrots, spinach, mushrooms, asparagus, cabbage, peppers and many other vegetables also supply the body with more antioxidants such as carotenoids and ferulic acid than they do when raw. The downside of cooking veg is that it can destroy their vitamin C. The raw versus cooked argument is a complicated one. Our best advice, eat plenty of vegetables just the way you like them. Can I really eat what I like on the off-duty days? Yes. Counterintuitive as it may seem, no foods are off-limit, none prescribed. On the 5 days a week when we're not restricting calories, we both eat freely. The whole point of the 5-2 approach is that for 5 days a week, you shouldn't feel as if you're on a continuous diet. Even so, don't try to gorge in a bid to make up for lost time, like a contestant in a blueberry pie contest. You could compensate for fasting by grossly overeating the next day, but it's very hard to do, and you probably won't want to. We are creatures of habit, which makes it difficult for us to change our ways. But ingrained habits can also be helpful. After a fast, people seem to find it relatively easy to step back into normal eating. This absence of hyperphagia, excessive appetite, after a day of rationing calories may seem surprising, but it is borne out by anecdotal experience. Many fasters report not feeling particularly hungry the day after a fast. What's more, many people discover that their lifelong love of high-sugar, high-fat foods seems to diminish as intermittent fasting becomes a way of life. As yet, we can only speculate as to why this may be the case, but some individuals certainly experience a galvanizing effect from the weight loss they achieve. As they drop the pounds, their resolve grows stronger, and eating more healthily, cutting back on pizzas, pies and potatoes, seems a natural lifestyle change. Humans have, however, evolved to prefer calorie-rich foods. It once gave us an edge. Perhaps the greatest advantage of the fast diet is that it expressly includes pleasure foods on 5 days of the week. For most of the time, there is no limitation, no deprivation, no guilt. The psychological impact of not being denied is huge. It frustrates what's known as the disinhibition effect, a paradox in which designating certain foods off-limits makes us likely to eat more of them. Remember then that this is not a cycle of binging and starving. It is calibrated and moderate. Studies and experience show that intermittent fasting will regulate appetite, not make it more extreme. You could pig out on your non-fast days, working your way steadily through all the ice cream flavours in the freezer. Even if you did, you'd still get some of the metabolic benefits of fasting. But you won't do that. In all likelihood, you'll remain gently, intuitively attentive to your calorie intake, almost without noticing. Similarly, you may find yourself naturally favouring healthier foods once your palate is modified by your occasional fasts. So yes, eat freely, forbid nothing, but trust your body to say when. Is breakfast important? Dieting lore has long suggested that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. Miss it in the morning, and it's like leaving the house without a coat. But that's not necessarily the case. Recent research shows that a bigger breakfast begets a bigger lunch and a bigger dinner, which, no surprises here, means a higher overall calorie count for the day. Some fasters find that they need sustenance to start the day. Others may prefer to wait until later to break their fast. It's up to you, and whichever pattern you choose may change over time. What can I drink? Plenty, as long as it doesn't have a substantial calorie content. In practice, as with most decisions on the fast diet, the choice is entirely up to you. Drink plenty of water. It's calorie-free, actually free, more filling than you think, and will stop you confusing thirst for hunger. In summer, add rounds of cucumber or a dash of lime. Freeze it and suck on cubes. If you want warmth, miso soup contains protein, feels like food, and clocks up only 84 calories per cup. Vegetable bouillon pulls off the same trick. If you find it hard to sleep, a mug of instant low-cal hot chocolate is under 40 calories and a comforting thought. During the day, no-cal drinks are best. Hot water with lemon is a standby favourite for fasters, but you might prefer to add mint leaves or a scattering of cloves, a slice of ginger root or some lemongrass. If you are fond of herbal teas, try some unfamiliar flavours to spice up the day. Licorice and cinnamon, lemongrass and ginger, lavender, rose, chamomile. Green tea may have health-giving antioxidant properties, the jury's out, but if you like it, drink it. On fast days, we drink our tea and coffee black and sugarless. If you prefer it with milk and artificial sweeteners, fine. But beware that the calories in milk add up, and what you are trying to do is extend the time you are not consuming any calories at all. While fruit juices are seen as healthy, they generally have a surprisingly high sugar content, are lower in fibre than a whole fruit, and can rack up the stealth calories without so much as a by your leave. Commercial smoothies can have a similar sugar content to Coca-Cola, and because they are acidic, they are corrosive to your teeth. They're also loaded with calories. If you need flavour, swap juice and smoothies for very dilute cordials, perhaps a dash of elderflower with fizzy water and lots of ice. What about alcohol? Alcoholic drinks, though pleasant, merely provide empty calories. One glass of white wine contains about 120, while a can of beer has around 250. Unless you really can't say no, abstain absolutely on a fast day. It's a golden opportunity to slash your weekly consumption without feeling serially deprived. Think of it as an alcovoid for two achievable days each week. And what about caffeine? There's a growing body of evidence to suggest that, far from being a guilty pleasure, drinking coffee may be good for you, helping to prevent mental decline, improve cardiac health, and reduce the risk of liver cancer and stroke. So go ahead, drink coffee if that's what gets you going and keeps you going each day. It's a useful weapon in your arsenal against boredom, and coffee breaks can pleasantly punctuate your day. There's no metabolic reason to avoid caffeine during a fast, but if you have trouble sleeping, limit your intake later in the day. You should, of course, drink it black. A caramel macchiato, for example, has 224 calories, just saying. How about snacks? The general idea of the fast diet is to give your body an occasional holiday from eating. Let your mouth rest. Give your belly a break. If you must snack on a fast day, do it with awareness and frugality, always keeping an eye on the GI. See the snack table in the PDF. Now, you knew that chocolate bars were hardly a health food, but did you know how sugary rice cakes and fruit bars can be? Bear in mind that processed foods tend to have hidden sugars, and though convenient, won't give you anything like the nutritional advantage of good old-fashioned plants and proteins. Try carrot or celery sticks with hummus, or a handful of nuts. Always factoring them in to your daily calorie count. And don't cheat. Habitual snacking, even on low-calorie nutrient-rich foods, is not advised. Part of the motive here is to retrain your palate, so don't overstimulate it. If your mouth is desperate for attention, give it a drink. Can I use meal replacement shakes to get me through the early days? A number of people say that commercially available meal replacement shakes help them through the first and normally the hardest weeks of an intermittent fast. Arguably, shakes are simpler than calorie counting, and on your fast day, you could simply sip away when waves of hunger strike. We're not great fans, as we think real food is better. But if you find it helps, by all means try it. It's best to go for brands that are low in sugar. So what are the implications of cheating and having a few crisps or a cookie? To clarify, this is a book about fasting, the voluntary abstention from eating food. The reasons why this is good for you go way beyond the fact that you are simply eating fewer calories. They arise because our bodies are designed for intermittent fasts. As you've seen, the scientific term is hormesis. What does not kill you makes you stronger. So while starvation is bad, a little bit of short, sharp, shock food restriction is good. Your aim, then, is to carve out a food-free breathing space for your body. Going to 510 calories or 615 for a man won't hurt. It won't obliterate a fast. Indeed, the idea of slashing calories to a quarter of your daily intake on a fast day is simply one that has been clinically proven to have systemic effects on the metabolism. While there's no particular magic to 500 or 600 calories, do try to stick resolutely to these numbers. You need clear parameters to make the strategy effective in the medium term. Having an extra cookie on a fast day would be antithetical to your goals, not to mention the fact that it would probably spike your blood sugar and eat up most of your allowance in one buttery bite. When you're fasting, you need to think sensibly and coherently about your food choices, following the plan laid out here. Exercise willpower, reminding yourself that tomorrow is on its way. Should I take supplements during my fast? The fast diet is an intermittent method, not a deprivation regime, so your nutritional intake from a wide variety of food sources should remain relatively steady over time, providing all the vitamins and minerals you require. If, as recommended, your fast day foods centre on protein and plants, they'll give you all the goodness you need, so you won't have to resort to costly